Well, I do hope that at this point, 6 weeks into the series, this is the image that's in your mind. The junk drawer. Usually, a house is going to have one of these. And we know what we're looking for is in there. But you don't get it until you start to rummage. Until you start to dig around inside and out and stay after it until you find that truth that is in there. And more than just the image, I do hope that you've had some opportunity, taken some time, been able to do some rummaging of your own. That's the point. First, rummaging the book, Genesis. Looking at these stories with fresh eyes, asking ourselves, what are they here to tell us about God, about these lives that we're living, about who we are? Hope you're able to rummage the stories on your own as you read. I hope you're able to do that in conversation. You know, each of us only brings so much perspective. When you're able to do it in conversation, new things are brought out. You can meet in groups here on Sunday morning or any other place that you have trusted friends. We'd love to have you in that conversation. And even further, we hope that you've been able to rummage your own soul. We're asking everybody this season to take on this new rhythm, this new discipline, that at the end of the day, we practice the prayer of examine. It's a prayer of rummaging of the soul, where you quite simply invite the living God to gaze at your day with you at the end of the day. Being able to ask God, where, Lord? Where were we close this day? Where was I submitted? Where was I loving others? Shine that light, Jesus, and give it to me, God. I want to get better. Where did I drift? Where did I separate, so to speak? Where was I off track? And most importantly, as you rummage your own soul in the prayer of examine, why? What motivated the movements of the day? You know, church, you learn nothing from your experiences. You don't. People do not learn from their experiences. They learn from reflecting on your experiences. Sometimes people go through the same thing over and over again because we haven't taken the time to rummage it, to really dig deep on what it is that we could be learning from that. And so today, we're going to take a look at the second part of a two-part on Father Abraham as we look back to look forward. Father Abraham, today there are about 2.4 billion people who identify themselves as Christians. There's about 1.6 billion who would say the same about the Muslim faith, and about 13 million Jews. All of those groups, better than half of the world's population, would look to this man, Abraham, and in some sense identify him as a spiritual ancestor, as a father figure. Why? What is it that makes half the globe still look to this person and think that there's some significance and learning that can go on through his life? He uttered no prophecy. He performed no miracle. He commanded no army. He was never a king. What was it about this person that is so magnetic and people are still turning to him? Well, perhaps part of it is the simple fact that he allowed his life to be forged by God. He allowed his life to be forged by God. Forged like a samurai sword, like this picture. You know, samurai swords are as strong as they are, as sharp as they are, and last as long as they do because they are forged. Usually three pieces of metal heated up and brought together and then pounded till they're flat, and then the metal is lapped over again and they are heated up and pounded. The heat and the pounding takes out the impurities in the metal and makes them strong. It's an excellent metaphor for Abraham's life and the life that we are called to. Because you see, our natural inclination as humans is to not accept life for all that it is. Our inclination is to deny life, is to push it off somewhere else. It's part of what we find as we've been rummaging those first 11 chapters in the book of Genesis. Adam, did you eat it? Did you eat it, Adam? It was the woman that you gave me. He can't accept the heat, the forging that life was trying to give him in that moment. Eve, what is this? What's going on? It was the serpent. She couldn't accept the heat, the forging that life was given to her. Cain, where's your brother?
What?
Am I my brother's keeper? Couldn't accept the forging. Even further, Noah, I'm going to destroy the earth. No protest? Not even 1 ounce of energy expended trying to bring a neighbor in? You're just going to save you and yours? That's it? You're not responsible? Yes, we are responsible. He couldn't accept the heat. The first 11 chapters help to describe how we deny life. You know, my eyes have been opened to this in a new way. In these last several weeks, I've been observing life through that lens. Do we really? Watch this week. You'll be shocked at how often you do it and how those around you do it. Try to push responsibility onto somebody else. Right now, classically, we're doing it in the partisan way as a country. It's their fault, it's their fault, their fault, their fault. It's never our own. The heat, the forging that life gives. Abraham turns the corner in chapter 12. The Bible is organized that way. Chapters 1 through 11 show us what's going wrong. Chapter 12 through Revelation 22 show God bringing it back together. And he starts with an individual named Abram. And he essentially says to Abram, he tells him, God does, leave everything and start a journey where you will be told to go once you start. I promise it will be for your best. A whole nation of descendants like the world has never seen before. A tribe that is not in it for themselves, but a tribe that is in it to bless their neighbor. They understand that they are blessed for the sole purpose of blessing other people. Abram responds, so, knew everything. Knew everything. That's what you're calling me to. Knew everything. Let go of everything that I know. Okay. I'll go. Abram is able to receive the heat. He's able to accept what life actually is and is so forged in the making. Church, even right there is so much to mine. As we've been looking at Genesis, can you hear the voice of God on your life? Can you hear the very voice of God calling you to a new thing? If you've signed up to follow Jesus Christ, the goal is to be like Jesus. That means we all got a long way to go. We'll all be always being called to something new. Have you been able to hear and receive what it is that God is calling you to do? You're getting close to hearing it when it feels hotter in the room. When there's a forging that's going on, you're seeing a hammer come at you. That's probably a good clue that something is, God is attempting to forge something in you. Can we accept the forging that God is giving us? Well, with a promise like that, I'm going to give you a family that turns into a nation that will bless every family, it says in the 12th chapter. With a promise like that, we would anticipate your average reader some sort of deposit right away. Some sort of reception of the gift that happens right away to let him know it's coming and it's going to take a while, but here's the initial deposit. Maybe they'd have a kid right away, find out that they're pregnant, that they would start to build a barn in this new land or something. But Abraham went and he arrives in the land that God said he's going to give him, and there's people there. It's not an empty land. There's people there, and there's a famine in the land. And so he has to leave the land, and he still has not one descendant, but he also has to leave the land. If we accept that God has a call on your life, if you accept that God has a call on your life, God does have a call on your life. If we accept that God has a call on your life, on the life of our church, anticipate setbacks. Setbacks are what mark the journey. Anticipate setbacks. It will not go as you're expecting it. Accepting that it won't go as you expect and carrying on anyway is what it means to grow up. Setbacks mark the journey the whole way. The very first thing that Abram encounters as he's heard from God is a land that is full of people and doesn't have enough food for him. Setback. When we anticipate setback, it changes the game for us. It's what's called growing up. As we rummage, we see that Abraham's life is one forging event after another. From all the different sides, he experiences deep conflict with his very own wife, Sarah. Let's take a look at that. They are both on the same promise. They're both pursuing the same path. And yet they have deep conflict with one another. This long-awaited son that they are supposed to have together is finally born. And he, as he's growing up, they have a difference of opinion. In chapter 21, let's read this. It says, "But Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had born to Abraham, playing with her, son. So she said to Abraham, 'Cast out this slave woman with her son, for the son of this slave woman shall not inherit along with my son Isaac.' The matter was very distressing to Abraham on the account of his son." Two people married on the same vision, on the same path, having conflict. Can you imagine that? These people are on the same path, yet inner turmoil is part of what their relationship is. Very distressing. That did get resolved and they moved on because Abraham did the right thing and listened to his wife and did what she told him. The Lord also told him to do it, and they were able to move forward. They were able to move on, even though they were in conflict, God was forging him from all sides. That issue did get resolved. He experiences forging in other deepest, in his deepest places, mostly in his own relationship with the living God. If you look in chapter 19, he somehow is hearing from God that a city will be destroyed. And in Abraham's mind, this makes no sense at all. And so he starts to argue with God. He starts to negotiate. He pushes back. God, it's distressing to be forged like this. I would say terribly so. In the lives that we live today, when there are events that are taking place, sometimes the most stressful forging is when we don't understand what God is doing. And we can't make any sense of it one way or the other. And so we start in our wrestling matches with God. It's so distressing. It's so much nicer and cleaner when it seems like, yeah, God, that makes sense and that's right. Let's all follow that. But when we don't know what God is doing, it can tear us apart when we honestly engage with the living God. Further along in this, in chapter 15, back in chapter 15, the Lord is communicating to Abraham, and it's described this way. In this curious way, in chapter 15, I think I put this one on the slide. Yeah, as the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell on Abram, and a deep and terrifying darkness descended upon him. Then the Lord said to Abram, and he goes on to talk about how the future generations will play out. The voice of the Lord communicating to Abraham, and it's described as a terrifying darkness. Isn't the voice of the Lord supposed to bring illumination and lightness and joy all the time? Sometimes when we're in the middle of it with God, it's the deepest, darkest moments of our life. Because we can't understand it. We're looking at a tapestry from behind and can't make sense of the whole thing. And so it starts to tear us apart. When we're honest about it, that's often how the interaction actually ends up. He has a forging experience in the deepest places of who he is with the relationship he's got with his God. He's got this wide open relationship with God where there's honest and clear communication going. And it's described as a terrifying darkness, not to mention, of course, the classic Abraham event in chapter 22, when he's supposed to offer up his own son that was supposed to be the gift from God. Abraham must have been so confused. He must have been so confused or so frustrated. I thought I was going to be called to something glorious. This future where I've got this huge family and a new kind of tribe and everybody loves us. What's with all the forging? And why does it feel like pressure from all sides? And where is my happily ever after? Abraham's life is not a happily ever after once he interacts with God. It's this whole different experience of being forged into something new. Being transformed into something different. I want to suggest that perhaps on the deepest level of his forging was his waiting. Is there anything that forges us as much as a solid waiting? He was promised a family, a nation that would bless other nations. 25 years later, a son is finally born. One son. 25 years later, this is when I am most tempted to cash it in, when it's taking too long. I confess my preferences. I have too deeply received the teaching of my age. I want what I want when I want it. That's what I want. I'm always impressed with ministries or companies that get started and grow really fast. And I'm usually jealous. Hey, God, we love this vision of a new tribe. Let's get it going. Why wait 25 years? In 25 years, you can be well into the next generation of people. And we can kick this thing into overdrive and make it go. I'm in a hurry. And I have to catch myself and slow and pray and walk at the Lord's timing, which is sometimes faster than I want on things that I don't want, and sometimes slower than I want when it's things that I do want. When I think of our dinner time vision that we are in the middle of, I want us to be reaching people. I want us to be a transformed community that much better reflects the broader kingdom of God, that has people better connected, and I want it to happen yesterday. I don't want to have to wait on the Lord's timing. All good things do take time. How is Abraham able to accept this, to continue to receive this type of pressure, this forging, this hammering, this heat? How does he hold on? Well, in part, we could see that's because he knew he was called. He knew he was called. He somehow understood and believed that God had something for him. Seven different times in the narrative of Abraham, you see God promising him explicitly land. Four different times he promised children. When we become convinced, this is what God wants, anything can be endured. Once a human or a group becomes convinced, this is what I am to do, anything can be endured. I think that we see this in one of our partner ministries called Soaring Wings. On a practical level, I want to tell you that ministry should not exist. Yet, when the one spouse, Anita, receives somehow a communication from God when they're living in New Hampshire, you're supposed to be working with homeless people in Colorado, thinking, I don't want to go do that. I like it where I'm at, and this is a better thing. I'm not going to tell my husband. Independently then, a husband over here, Ed, gets some sort of revelation from God somehow, some way. You're supposed to be working with homeless people out over there in Colorado. That's great, but I like it where I'm at, and I don't want to move. I'm not going to tell my wife. Series of events happens. They talk to one another. Oh, you too. Okay, I guess we got to go. That ministry should not exist with the amount of challenges that they have faced concerning health, concerning finance, and concerning location. That ministry should not exist, yet here it is. Why? Because they are convinced of their call. They know what they are here on this earth to do, and so essentially nothing can stop it. Conviction of call can weather any storm. When we know that we know this is what God wants, it can weather any storm. Abraham was not perfect on this point, and neither is any other follower. In chapter 17, we notice that God is giving the sign of Abraham's circumcision, promising again children to him, and Abraham expressed his doubt in chapter 17. Abraham fell on his face and laughed after the promise was given again to him about children. Can a child be born to a man who is 100 years old? Can Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child? Can that happen? He wasn't perfect on that point, but if we keep rummaging right there, it's where we find the gold. If we keep rummaging right there, I believe it's where the true gold is. It's not that Abraham is perfect. It's not that he's so strong all the time and he never wavers from his conviction and his vision and he goes against all odds. It's that he's honest. Abraham lives with uncompromising integrity, with what is actually going on underneath in the depths of who Abraham is, in his psyche and his soul and his deepest heart, and what is being expressed of his life, they match. He lives with a sense of honesty and integrity. Everything is consistent within him. He's never putting on a mask and showing others what they think they are supposed to be seen. Lord, you're going to destroy this whole town? Whoa, let's talk about that. Noah couldn't do that. He couldn't live with that sense of integrity, expressing to God what was actually in there. Abraham could. He's telling God, God, you're really wrong about this. We need to evaluate and start over again. The same thing here with the story of him having a son. At my age, are you kidding me? That's a joke. He's honest with his relationship with God. He's saying, I used to believe that when I was younger, but who are we kidding now? We remember, don't we, church, who it is that Jesus saves his fiercest anger for, his sharpest critiques for. It's the actor, the showman. The word hypocrite, which Jesus lights up on more than anything else in the New Testament, simply means stage actor. You're acting. You want people to see this, receive this, have this impression, but you're a whole different kind of person. That's not even your personality. It means wearing a mask. It's such a big deal, is integrity, because it's the whole deal. The whole deal is relationship. And the power of the whole deal is relationship, God with human beings. And the whole fuel, the whole electricity of a relationship is honesty. Pull the honesty, the integrity plug, and the relationship shuts down. I think that it's true that by nature of each one of our unique personalities, each of us struggles with our own set of unique sins. For example, some people actually, they don't struggle with pride at all. They live with a settled sense of humility, and it never really even occurs to them to try to one-up somebody else. Other people, though, have a struggle with pride in every single interaction that they are with another person. They want to somehow be better, prove that they are better. Do you see what I'm saying here? There is a long list of vices, and some of them are not interesting to you at all. You've never been one for greed or envy or gossip, but other things, whoo. They get us. I believe we each have our own set of things that can really undo us, that will be our mortal sin if we allow them to be. You know you are getting close to identifying yours when you're deeply embarrassed by it. When you would rather trade your own particular vice for any other of the vices that are out there because it seems to you as the worst one. Deceit is mine. Deep integrity, like Abraham, doesn't come easy for me. It took me a very long time to rummage my own life, to put the pieces together to see, oh, this is what's driving a lot of this. You know, as when I was a young child, my folks tell these stories about how all that they had to do, they said, oh man, we had to wrestle your sister on everything, but all we had to do was look at you the wrong way and you would change. Your behavior would, why? What, who does that as a child? Somebody who wants to please somebody else. When your nature is to please, before you're even conscious enough to think about what you're doing, when your nature is to do that, you then end up giving people what you think they want in order to be received, in order to be pleasing. So I know this one personally. I know this one personally. Those who need approval will sculpt reality, will put on a mask, so we think we're giving people what they need. This one comes across personally for me. How, and I know how much it can cost in a relationship where we are sculpting reality. Well, we're giving people what they think they need to hear. And how rewarding it can also be to live with a greater sense of integrity. You know, one of the truly amusing aspects of being a pastor, and I mean that amusing, is that nearly every week that I'm interacting with people, someone somewhere will drop an unintended swear word. And after they do, they try to bring it back in their mouth. And I usually try to tell them, no. Now you're finally speaking in your native tongue. Now we're actually having a conversation, so light it up. I don't care. I know this one personally. Integrity is the fuel of relationship. It's part of what makes Abraham, Abraham. He's able to deal with life as it comes, receive the forging, and not try to change it and make it look like something else. Not try to give God what he thinks God wants to hear and see. Not try to give other people what they think they are supposed to receive. I really do want to preach every Sunday. You know, I want to preach every Sunday. If you do these things, if you believe these things, if you act this way, life will go well for you. That's what I want to preach because that seems to draw a crowd. And while some of that is true, there's a strain of truth within that. The stories we are given to rummage don't look like that. Abraham's story is not that. Do these things, believe these things, think these things, and then your life turns out great. Paul's life was not like that. Mary's life was not like that. Jesus' life is not like that. When we turn and give ourselves fully in surrender to the living God and follow after Jesus, it's almost the exact opposite. Once we sign on to trust, things usually get sideways. Saying yes to going is often when the forging of our lives starts. The life of Abraham was one major forging event after another. They are not lives that are characterized by increasing comfort. They are not lives that are characterized that have the shape of their own personal preferences on everything. They are lives that are forged. Accepting that life is a forging is what starts us to turn the corner. I used to do a lot of coaching when my kids were younger, their soccer and football teams, and it was all the difference in the world between the kids who got it and the kids who didn't. There was kids who were always saying, this is so hard. I can't believe you're pushing us like this. This is miserable. And there was always other kids who were thought, as the other ones were complaining, right, this is practice. That's what we do. Embracing the burn is what starts to turn the corner on life. Watch for it this week. Your soul will be tempted to push the burn somewhere else. That when the heat and the forging and the pounding of life comes, you'll try to do everything to escape it. You'll use chemicals. You'll use screens. You'll use control. You'll want to push it out somewhere else and do anything except receive the heat and the forging that this life is here trying to give us. And it's twice as hard until we accept it. What ruins a hike for a child sooner than anything else? Telling them that you're almost there. If you tell the kid you got 2 more miles to go and it's only a half a mile, it's a great hike. If you tell them you're almost there and it's another half a mile, it's forever. Once we've accepted the fact that life is forging, that's when we start to get around the corner, that something breaks free and we accept the burn. And the scriptures are audacious enough, they are wise enough to say, this is the way. This is the way we are meant to live. If we try to save our lives, Jesus says we lose them. The only path of discipleship, according to Jesus, is one that takes up a cross. And it's what your deepest you actually wants. It's what your deepest you really wants. We rummage Abraham's story so we know better how to live. We embrace the forging of this life. Life is hard. And we do so with the integrity of Abraham. If our ancestor, under the power of the living God, could do it, then you too, under the power of the living God, can do it. You are being called to deeper steps of trust. Each one of you is. You are being called to go to a land that you will be shown and trust God with things that you didn't think you could trust God with. You're being called to go, whether that's literal or whether that's metaphorical. You're called to be a part of a tribe that has a blessing in order for the sole purpose of offering a blessing. It's yours to rummage what that looks like today, and it's what your deepest you really wants the most. In the end, you don't want one of those flimsy plastic lightsabers from Target. You want a samurai sword.